expression of love.
You too, she said.
Bye, Jia.
She was wearing her purple jacket, and she waved until I was well inside the terminal, and the sliding doors drew closed. This is my last memory of my sister. There was a storm. Her body was found, frozen in the snow. I could not parse what I'd heard. Those days after I recall as a blur. I was angry. So angry. Angry with her. Angry with myself. Angry with those nosy reporters in that provincial town. And outright furious with Yona. Though I'd loved him like a brother. Who was already dead. Who had remained ignorant of Lucia's illness. Who had run his mouth loud and loose up until the very end. I thought, immediately, she had gone off her pills. Stefan had tried to reason with me. This was his usual approach. But I refused to listen. I blamed him, too. Or rather, as part of blaming myself, I attacked him whenever he tried to acquit me of guilt. He'd criticized too harshly, refused to get involved. But I realize, now, that in essence it was this. I faulted him for not loving her the way I did. It would take years before I could see his side. 14 months after Lucia's death, I embarked on a soul-searching trip to China. A car accident, we'd been told, and I had believed without question. Our Gonggong Popo no longer alive, our mother born an only child. But I was able to track down one of Ma's cousins who lived in Guilin. An old Ai not shy with her opinions.
Your Ba gambled, she said.
He ran with cheap women, had illicit affairs.
A car accident? No.
Swamped in debt, facing arrest, our father had driven off a cliff to his death. A bus full of schoolchildren as his witnesses. His image, tarnished forever in my mind. Yet I could not say I was shocked or surprised. But if part of me had suspected, it still saddened me deeply. Above all this thought, that our mother had insisted on carrying these burdens alone. Not long afterward, I told Stefan I wanted to leave Switzerland. I could not articulate why, but whatever we said to each other, it was never right, or enough, and a bitterness had become entrenched in both of us. He was not at fault. Nor his family, ever appropriate and polite. Even Raphael, by then, was finishing up medical school, living with a girlfriend in Geneva, preparing their own vegan meals. I knew only that I wanted to be somewhere different, to reset my mind. And if this rendered me selfish, somehow I no longer cared. But Stefan did not attempt to dissuade me. He let me go. As Yona had done with Lucia 15 years earlier. I came to New York. I came alone. I rented a tiny apartment on the Upper West Side. I was recruited by a healthcare firm, worked 9 to 5, went running, painted, cooked as I liked. I visited Tess and her family in Brooklyn Heights, occasionally babysitting for her 3 children on the weekends. Apart from that, I admit, I led an insular existence. But I was calm in a way I'd never been before. After 2 years, I decided to pursue a master's degree in arts management. At an advanced age, yes, but I was undeterred. I did not know I would stay, or that Stefan and I would eventually decide to reevaluate, via hours and hours of video counseling, or that he would join me here for 3 months after Gorsmuthi died. How trite. But true. Things change. Some all at once, some over a lifetime. I work for one of the museums now, managing their education department, a position I enjoy immensely. Stefan will come again next week, for 6 months this time. It has been nearly 20 years since we first met, playing tennis. And Rafi and his wife are expecting their first child this winter. A boy. I still go to Chinatown, to my favorite bakery on Mott Street. but I cannot bring myself to venture to the East Village. The store is no longer, I've been told, replaced by a trendy Moroccan restaurant with a hookah lounge. One day I will summon enough courage to go check it out. Though by then, perhaps it will have evolved into something else. Sometimes I still try to imagine what it must have been like. Lucia alone in her dream state. Perhaps, if she closed her eyes, she could still feel his presence. His raspy voice, the rough skin of his palm on top of her hand, his cindery breath mixed with aftershave. Curious, for how could one not be curious in a dead man's domain? She floated through the house, snooped through closets for old keepsakes, a shoebox of old photos of his children, perhaps, or one perfect snapshot of their wedding day. Had he other loves? What of all those years after she'd gone away? She would have imagined it then. His life. Her life. If only she'd come back to him. She had started to pack his belongings. A day here, a day there, at an unhurried pace. To launder his sweaters, his sweatshirts, his socks, his jeans, to organize his personal items before giving them away. Keep, Salvation Army, trash. She would have needed a day, at least, just to sort through his tools. Yona possessed little clothing, but owned dozens of screwdrivers and hammers and wrenches and pliers. One drawer contained only flashlights, another, nails and screws. In the master bedroom I did come upon an odd sight. An ice chest full of batteries, plopped in the middle of the king-size bed. Perhaps she'd been tempted to throw them away, then heard his voice in her ear. What? So she'd sat cross-legged on the bedspread, sifted through them methodically. The D's, the C's, a batch of double and triple A's. Each time the battery tester's needle floating on its color-coded dial. Good, low, replace. She'd sorted the acceptable ones into piles, placed them inside a series of Ziploc bags. There must have been hundreds in all. I never told Manny these details. Only that after Yona died she must have had a difficult time, and things had ended tragically. I did not attend Lucia's funeral in Ecuador. Likewise, he could not come to the memorial service that Tess helped me arrange in Westchester. A simple ceremony, in a park, with a lovely view of the Tappan Zee Bridge. Though Lucia seemed to know everyone, she was close to few. So it was a handful of her friends from college, a few former colleagues, a Pakistani woman I did not know, an older woman with dyed orange hair. "My papi, he can't come to this country," said my niece. I nodded. I knew this was because he had violated the provisions of his visa many years ago. He was an illegal in this country, and would never be allowed back in. Lucia had understood this clearly. That night in Cuenca, banging around in that tiny room. She knew it was wrong, plain wrong, to take Esperanza away from her father. But she could not bear to leave her young daughter behind. Was I wrong? Misguided? Was I out of line? If I hadn't burst in that night, could Lucia's life have taken a different path? I still picture her with Yona sometimes. The two of them sitting on that dilapidated bench outside the store, chatting with the denizens of the neighborhood. But if I hadn't stepped in, Esperanza, the sole innocent among us all, would have lost her father. In my deepest heart, I believed this to be wrong. Manny was a good father. He loved his daughter. And for Lucia to raise the child alone seemed impossible. This was what I thought at the time. But in retrospect, one could say it was Lucia's right to live the life of her own choosing, regardless of her illness, and I should never have interfered. I don't know. This is my secret. I never did tell Manny the truth. I will not tell Esperanza. "My papi is a good person," she said. "Yes, yes he is. Your mother was a good person, too. A dreamer. Always a dreamer. Wanting to have it all. This is very American, you know.
I'm Chai Meridorian, said my niece, flashing a grin.
She leaned forward to touch my elbow, as if I were in some need of reassurance. And I could see it already. Those NYU boys flocking to her side like rowdy pigeons. That's probably a good balance, I said.
She was sad sometimes.
Her gaze fell to the floor.
I remember that. My mother was sad. Why?
I knew no clear answer to this question. She felt isolated, maybe. Constricted. Misunderstood. Lucia. Always chasing some happily ever after. She needed to be free. Or was she simply childish, self-centered, irresponsible? For a long time I saw her as the latter, I admit.
Did she love my papi?
I don't know. I sighed. I'm sorry, Esperanza. There are a lot of things I just don't know. She bit her lip, the way her mother often did, as if mulling the acceptability of this answer. The cause of death was ruled accidental. I like to think this is the truth. I picture her, alone in that kitchen, listening to the wobble of her mixing bowl on the countertop. Perhaps she went to check if she'd left the garage light on, or the car unlocked, or a snow shovel in the driveway. Perhaps she heard a dog bark or howl or glimpsed a deer through the window, cracked open the glass sliders, smelled the wind, the pines, the smoke of a distant wood fire. She stepped outside, let the Arctic gusts blast away stray images of bulky latex-gloved men carting off her yoni's body on a stretcher. Memories of death, those final days, forever etched in one's mind. Tired of confinement in that somber house, she decided she needed fresh air. She enjoyed long walks. The majesty of the forest. The light snow would have offered a peaceful idyll. Nature is a comfort, she always said. Or perhaps it was so much more mundane. She was missing an ingredient. Baking soda? Almonds? And thought she'd go say hello to the neighbors. Ward Dunkel and his three Irish wolfhounds, acquainted with her, lived on the other side of the lake. The storm came quickly, the police officer said. One could get lost in those woods. The voices. It could have been the voices. Serpents, she once told me. Two. A pair. What did the serpents tell you to do? I asked.
They don't exactly tell me to do anything, she said. It's more like they expose my inner state.
If only she had not been alone. I replay those days in Minnesota. I search for clues. Was her behavior irrational? Did she seem deeply depressed? She was sad, of course, yet hadn't she flown all the way to New York City, returned with one of those ridiculously large suitcases stuffed full of Chinese herbs? But the shock, the grief, the stress of it all. The serpents did it. Yes, this is easy to say. But I like to think that she simply went out looking for something beautiful. Esperanza, I said. It's still sunny outside. Would you like to go for a walk in the park?
Central Park? She said. Not the words, but her voice, her manner. So like Lucia.
We entered at 72nd Street just as the day was starting to wane, dipping into the splendorous light of magic hour. I brought her to Strawberry Fields. Was she familiar with the Beatles? John Lennon? Maybe the Rolling Stones? Of course, she said. And this surprised me. And we discussed music, and she said she played guitar, liked to sing, though her papi had given her strict orders to study finance or computers, something practical. But she would see first how her classes went. She might find politics or literature interesting. Who knows? I was impressed with her English, which was endearingly proper, with a slight British accent, and her grammar mostly smooth. Our conversation continued then, beyond the past to her future, and next I noticed the sunlight had disappeared. "It's genetic," I said, suddenly, not to be morbid or unpleasant, but because I felt I had a responsibility to tell her. My niece, this girl on her journey to womanhood. "This illness, it's genetic."
"I've read that," she said.
"You need to be careful. Get plenty of sleep. Stay away from drugs. Take good care of yourself." She nodded with insufficient gravity, though correct politeness. "I'm so sorry. I wanted to say it, but I couldn't." "It's getting late, Esperanza. Do you know where you are? Can I help you get back to your dorm?"
"No, no," she said. "I can find it, though I think I'll walk a bit farther. Maybe I'll go to the zoo."
"It will be closed now."
"That's okay. But, Tia Miranda, please, there is one small thing."
"What is it?" I said. And in that moment a maternal tenderness overwhelmed me unexpectedly. She was still so much a child.
"Protect this girl, God. Protect her, goddammit. I hope you can call me Essie."
"Essie? Yes, of course."
Its lightness off the tongue suited her.
"Welcome to America, Essie. Or should I say, welcome back. Can I take you out for dinner next week after you've settled in? Stefan is in Switzerland at the moment, but he'll be here by then. Maybe pizza? Or sushi?"
"Sushi?"
"Japanese raw fish. Have you tried?" She wrinkled her nose.
"Well, my papi says in America there is everything, but maybe pizza first."
She yum-yum tapped her belly, laughed, and I could not resist wrapping my arms around her slender shoulders. "Pizza, then," I said. My niece.
Hope. Butterfly.
She clung to me and did not let go. I was caught by surprise. Tears filled my eyes.
"I'm here," I said.
My words, barely a whisper. I did not know what more to say, so I said nothing more. But I patted her slowly on the head. And after a long moment she pulled back and smiled, and her lightness was again restored.
"Besitos! Goodbye!"
I waved and she waved. And I stood, watching, as she walked away, envious of her youth, admiring of her grace, though she wobbled every few steps on her Mary Janes, catching a heel on the pavement.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Everything Here is Beautiful by Mira T. Lee. Narrated by Cassandra Campbell, with Emily Wu Zeller as Miranda, Ozzy Rodriguez as Manuel, Kim Mai Guest as Lucia, and Paul Bamer as Yona. This program was directed by Fred Sanders. Executive producer, Kelly Gilday. Text copyright 2018 by Mira T. Lee. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.